Hello, my friends. This is The Thing About Cars, a special episode. Today, we're going to do a very quick episode with Ben. Are you at the table?
I'm here.
And just myself. We don't have Becca or Dawn or any of the other normal conspirators with us today. It's just going to be a very quick and simple thing for this particular episode. Ben, you got a book from our friend at Quarto Books, didn't you?
I did, yes.
What did you get?
This is Vespa, Style and Passion.
So it's the anniversary of Vespa, like 75 years of Vespa or something like that, right?
You know, if I knew you were going to ask, I would have looked it up, but... Yeah.
Well, here, we have this thing called the internet.
Yes, we do.
Let's look that up real quick. But tell me about the book in the meantime.
Okay, well, it's a nice, big, beautiful, you know, hardcover thing. It's very stylish in appearance, much like the subject matter that it covers. And really, it goes through the whole thing from the origins to the present day. It has lots of great pictures from, you know, the development, the manufacture, the pop culture. It really covers the whole thing. If you're interested in Vespa, you know, you need this book.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And I was off by 5 years. I think Vespa, no, I'm not off by 5 years. Vespa turns 75 next year.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That sounds about right. Because one thing I did pick up just from skimming through it was, and I wasn't really aware of the history of the company myself, was that the Vespa scooter, as we know it, was a post-World War II creation, which I did know, but I wasn't sure exactly when. But it came along fairly shortly after the end of the war. You know, much of Europe had been devastated.
Right.
By the war. Germany and Italy, all the Axis countries had been, you know, pretty well bombed down to their kneecaps.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of these countries needed, you know, cheap and easy transportation that could be, you know, assembled quickly and could be designed and brought to market and built very quickly to meet the need.
Mm-hmm. So Vespa was sort of to Italy what Honda was to Japan.
Yeah. Pretty much. And the company goes back much further. The Piaggio company goes all the way back into the 19th century, sort of like Studebaker, except it wasn't started for, you know, horse wagons like Studebaker was. It was originally a company that built furniture for ships.
Huh.
And then it got into a little bit of shipbuilding itself. And then the 20th century became an aviation company.
No kidding.
And there still are Piaggio airplanes made in Italy. Not, you know, that we don't see them a lot in the West. I think it's a pretty small company, but yeah, they're still around. But the scooter came about right after World War II, and it was a brilliant, brilliant design. It was not the first one that Piaggio tried to make, but the first one didn't go over very well. It was like a big, you know, kind of jelly bean looking thing. It hadn't, you know, it was one big, large enclosed body that had all the components inside it. It wasn't really designed for comfort or style or ease of use, but then one of their designers came up with this brilliant idea. He just basically started with a human person.
Yeah.
Like one other kind of person. a human being sitting in, you know, neutral position, knees slightly lower than hips, feet almost under the hips, leaned forward slightly, and just drew the vehicle around that.
Huh.
And so this is how we get that brilliant design that has, you know, a low floor, nothing to step over.
Right.
A little bit of, you know, shielding from the elements for your legs and all the mechanicals below and behind you.
Yeah.
And it works really, really well. It works well enough that it's been copied the world over ever since. And, you know, Vespa is still being made. And, you know.
So Vespa was the first company to give us what ended up becoming sort of a universal scooter design.
Pretty much, yeah.
Huh. I did not know they were the first. So.
There were some vehicles, you know, before World War II that were vaguely similar in concept, but still weren't quite the same thing.
Yeah.
There was actually an American-made two-wheeler called the Narrocar that, you know, had a step-through design like that. But it was still something where you're more sitting down, and even though it was a two-wheeler, it was still really kind of more of a car than a motorbike.
Right. Right. I've always been intrigued with scooters. I tried to drive one in India many, many years ago, and promptly learned that I should never try to do that in India.
It is a pretty challenging environment.
Yeah, India, the environment is what made it difficult. I mean, there's basically two rules to traffic in India, and those rules are stay as far to the left as possible. Or is it right? I'm losing my mind here. It's right-hand driving. So stay as far to the left as possible and don't have any accidents. So those are the only rules that they've got.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm exaggerating a little bit, but man, it's chaotic over there.
But they do love their scooters in India so much that there's a company there called Bajaj that, you know, whenever Vespa finishes making a model, they sell the tooling to Bajaj and they keep making it.
Huh. Okay.
And some of those have been imported into the United States and they're collectible.
Yeah.
Not as collectible as an original Vespa from way back when, but still, you know.
Right, right. I'm looking at the Vespa website. The original came out in 1946. It was called the Vespa 98.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've just kept making them better and better ever since then.
And the name is the Italian word for wasp, which if you look at the thing from the side, becomes a little apparent. That kind of bustled rear end with the engine in it sort of resembles the wasp's abdomen and then that skinny little middle part.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And there's a bunch of cool stuff on the Vespa website. And apparently in 1957, they tried to make a car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't see that in the book.
Yeah. No, I imagine. Yeah, they're not very, I mean, clearly didn't continue very long. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, cheap and efficient mobility is the way to go in major cities these days. And I wish more cities would make room for that, more American cities would make room for that kind of transportation, because it's just super efficient and just stylish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So the book was pretty cool.
It is. Yeah.
What's the book called?
It's called Vespa Style and Passion.
And who was the author of that one?
Two authors, Valerio Boni and Stefano Cordara.
Oh, sounds like a couple of countrymen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see anything about it being translated, so I'm guessing that they did write it in English.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really nicely done. It's worthwhile. Even if you're not even necessarily a Vespa fan, if you just find the subject a little interesting, or you're into scooters in general or two-wheelers in general, it is very cool.
Well, I can't wait to borrow it from you when we get out of lockdown and check it out. And I've got to thank our publishing friends for sending it to you to review. Did you put up a blog about that on our website?
Not yet. I only got it about 2 days ago. So,
okay, good.
Haven't written anything, yeah, it's really cool. I want to read more of it before I try to write about it. But it's really nicely done. It's got both the history parts and the sort of encyclopedic model list, you know, parts.
Yep.
You know, it has a nice, big, beautiful, you know, 2-page color photograph of, you know, each model. And I think each one has kind of its own chapter or something kind of like that. But yeah, it shows how they changed through the years, how, you know, they've kept them up to date, but also have kept their traditional flavor alive.
Yeah. And Quarto knows how to make a really good looking book. Those guys do it right.
They do. They really do.
Yeah. Very cool. Thank you, Ben. Next on my list to talk about is there's a couple things in my parking lot here that I've noted. Two BMW cars in particular that have just been unloved, as you might say. I know, and I should take a picture of them for the Unloved Autos group on Facebook. But but one of them is a BMW 3 Series that, I'm not kidding, the entire car has been coated in bedliner.
Oh, wow. I would like to see that.
It's red bedliner. And I'll try to shoot a picture of it next time I go out. And then there's another one, a convertible 3 Series, that is just looks and sounds like it's been run into the ground. I know the guy is trying to turn it into his own little project car. But, you know, we used to joke about coffee can mufflers back in the early 2000s. And this one literally literally sounds like he's got a coffee can muffler on it. And
oh, my.
I'm like, what are you doing? And can I help with that? And
yeah.
But
well, if he keeps them alive in some way, and, you know, keeps them running and enjoys using them, then great. I just hope they don't, you know, rot into the pavement.
No, these are in fact two different owners, two different drivers.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it's just in the same complex, and they just happen to both be BMWs, which I think is kind of
weird.
But,
well, on the other end of the spectrum, I didn't go out of town this past week, but the previous week, the rental car company actually put me in a 3 Series BMW.
Ah, very cool.
And it was very nice. And I'm writing not a full review, but at least something about it for our blog, which will be online very soon. So maybe even by the time people hear this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a pretty cool car to play with.
I can imagine. And just for the record, I don't want to diss anybody for their own personal sense of style and enjoyment. You know, I'm not trying to do that.
But, yeah.
But you know, my initial reactions are, what on earth, and what are you doing to your car that makes coating it in bedliner a good idea? But you know, everyone has their taste, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I suppose one angle into that could be you know, whether he acquired the car recently or has had it for a long time. Maybe the paint is really, really shot.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want it to rust through, wants to protect it, but doing a, you know, by the book paint job is, of course, you know, really expensive, probably more than the car's worth. So if you're going to coat it with something, you know, you can get as creative as you want. The downside being that bedliner, I think, is probably on the heavy side.
Oh yeah.
Which, you know, if it, for an ordinary driver, this may not be a big deal, but if anybody cares about performance, it could be. And, you know, not being as smooth, well, the aerodynamic effects won't be noticeable by the seat of your pants, but because it may not be all that smooth, it might also, provide a bit of a trap for, you know, crud and dust and things.
Exactly.
And, could eventually get really funky.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, okay, I understand wanting to protect, you know, the paint if you're going to be in super, you know, some sort of super toxic or super rough environment. There's a word I'm looking for and I can't grasp, but it's heavy. It's terrible. It's much more heavy, several times more heavy than paint. And
another funny use of bedliners and BMWs, there was a guy in Texas I used to know who ran a little BMW motorcycle repair shop way down in, what was the name of the town? Martindale, down past San Antonio. Mm-hmm. I think he's still in business, but he had a guy who worked there who had a 70s model that had what's known as a touring tank. This is an aftermarket fuel tank that's, you know, extra large capacity for long trips. So it's kind of big and bulbous looking.
Mm-hmm.
And he had painted this touring tank with, you know, a fairly typical bedliner that was, you know, kind of a, you know, dark greenish black or blackish green.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, and because it has that texture that bedliner usually does, the overall effect was that this bike looked like it had a giant avocado for a fuel tank. But it was tough, and it, you know, it stood up to wear and tear. It stood up to him laying down on the thing on really long hauls. And
that's too funny. The avocado bike. That's great.
And it kept it from rusting, at least from the outside.
Right. All right. I've seen, you know, at some of the car shows we've been to, I've seen obviously like trucks and off-road vehicles that would paint their engine compartment in bedliner before installing their engines.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That makes some sense to me, right? Because of chemicals and stuff like that.
I suppose not really necessary, but hey,
no, not even. Yeah. Right. Not
why
even
not?
Necessary. But yeah. So anyway, again, I don't want to judge anyone. These are just things that struck me as being kind of what?
You know, sure.
Raise an eyebrow. And speaking of things that make me go, what? You posted something to our little internal group recently. Some guy kept on getting lowballed for a Camaro.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Well, it was a, it was, you know, kind of a case of not really what it appeared to be on the one hand, but on the other hand, I think his action was still a little over the top. What it was this Camaro that, you know, this was the second generation body style that came along. I forget the exact year, but, you know.
And he was trying to sell one.
Yeah, and it had been customized. Nice paint job, you know, raised bonnet, you know, nice interior, all kinds of neat things like that. And he claimed it was a split bumper version, which, for those who don't know, this is, you know, one of the ways people identify different generations. When the Camaro went to that F body that we know in the 70s, which is what this one was, you know, it originally had that kind of oval grill mm-hmm. with a little bumperette on either side of it. And so that's what they call the split bumper. At some point it went to an all the way across bumper before eventually going to that big thick bumper with just a little grill above, you know, in the late 70s. And from what I saw in some of the comments, this was not a true split bumper car. It was one that had been converted, which, you know, is kind of beside the point because it was still a pretty good looking car.
Sure.
Only a real Camaro purist would probably really care that much. It by all accounts, it looked like a nice car to have. I don't know what the asking price was, but he was sick and tired of low offers. And so he thought he'd, you know, show them a thing or two. And he chopped the roof off and the front end off. You know, he just took his Sawzall and went a little crazy with it. He said he'd rather haul it to the junkyard than take a low ball offer.
Which makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
No, well, except maybe in one little angle that I could see, which would be, well, maybe the guy, you know, is not hurting for cash. Maybe he's really affluent and honestly, you know, can live without getting whatever this car would fetch, which is probably well under $20,000.
Sure.
You know, the money probably doesn't really make any difference in his lifestyle. Either that or he is nuts.
Right.
But yeah, he felt his spite was that great, I guess.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you let your spite override someone else's enjoyment, right? I mean, even if all you're getting is lowballs, it doesn't mean you destroy someone else's chance to be happy.
Sure. You know, and even a little bit of money is better than no money. And he's probably going to have to pay to have the thing hauled off.
Right. Yeah. Good grief.
But, you know, we've all seen it, that ad that says, no low balls, I know what I got. It's almost become a running joke in some of the online car circles. I have a friend here in town who recently sold a Corvette. It was I forget the exact year, a 17 or 18 or something like that. And it was, I believe, the Z06, but don't quote me on that. If the guy who sold it is listening, you know, my apologies for not knowing all the details, but the thing was Darth Vader black, you know, black paint and, you know, window tint, all that jazz. And he had a lot of performance features on it. And I know it was somewhere up the hierarchy of the models for that year. It was a hot car, and he sold it. And as soon as he announced he was selling it, all his friends, you know, joked on his posts, you know, no low balls, you know what you got. I was one of them.
Right. So now it can be no low balls. I have a Sawzall.
Yeah.
Oh, good grief. Well, anyway, I hope, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say after that. A guy cuts up his own car instead of just selling it.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of speechless after that point, but
yeah.
And it does feel kind of odd to be doing an episode of The Thing About Cars without a moment of Grand Trivia Auto, but it doesn't make sense to do a moment of trivia unless we have the rest of the gang here.
Yeah, it's more fun with more people.
Yeah, I think so too.
So I guess we can make jokes about them instead, since they're not here to defend themselves.
That's true. And if they listen to this episode, I just want to say, Becca and Dawn and Ronnie and everyone else, that this was Ben's idea.
I think they all owe me an ass kicking for one thing or another already anyway. So.
No, it's good. But maybe this is a good time to wrap up this particular episode and get ready for the next set of tapings, which we should do next weekend. So if our listeners have any questions or car comments, please do write them in. We do use those on the show, as you know, items for car trivia, questions about your cars or about people or whatever. It doesn't matter. We love to hear from you. And you can do that by sending us your note via our Facebook page or via our website. Both of those do get to us. So thethingaboutcars.com or facebook.com, and check out The Thing About Cars. As always, thank you for being a part of The Thing About Cars family. Ben, you got any last minute things to put on the table before we get out of here?
Keep those Sawzalls away from my cars.
Exactly. No more Sawzalls, please. You guys be safe and careful out there. We will see you again with another episode in about a week. Take care.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road. We'll